Wednesday, February the 26th, was one of those days when I had to decide quickly whether to make a trip to New York and get my clothes fitted, the clothes that would be my main standbys all spring, or whether to just put it off until some indefinite time. So I went. Leaving on a regular airline, United, about 11:30, walking into the car aisle, and when I'm there, I feel like something like an intruder in the boudoir of the fairy princess. It's so beautiful and elegant. But then I'm just passing through, too. Ben Zuckerman and his fitter came up and carefully went over my coral suit and my green suit. And Mr. Ferry came up and fitted my fur coat. We're going to shorten it. And in the summertime, we're going to cut off enough of the collar to make a hat. And then we did all the measurements to hopefully make a form for me. Then Billy Marcus came over and joined us. She is on her way to Denmark with Stanley, where they'll spend about a month readying the Danish fortnight for next September. We had lunch in the room, Billy, Wendy, and I, looking out over the expanse of Central Park, all frozen in the fairyland of New York. And then we left to drive to LaGuardia and get back to the White House about 6 o'clock. I was just in time for big news. The tax bill had been passed completely, irrevocably, finally passed. Big step. Victory number one. And the White House was being filled, the East Room, with all the equipment of TV, and they were readying a press conference which was to take place at 6:30. So I fixed up a bit and went down with Linda and sat in the back row and watched the ceremonies. The table and microphone was right in front of the great urn of gorgeous flowers that I always think ought to be sitting for its portrait by some Flemish painter of old. And there Lyndon had gathered with him all the people who had been so instrumental in working the tax bill. Senator Russell Long, who had piloted it on the floor of the Senate, George Smathers, Representative Wilbur Mills, without whom nothing financial gets done, Carl Albert, the Speaker, the Secretary of the Treasury, Dillon. In fact, of leaders of both parties in every committee and every phase that had to do with the tax bill. I must say it's pleasant occasionally to savor a moment of triumph, and this was one. Lyndon's speech began, "Today I have signed into law an $11.5 billion reduction in federal income taxes, the largest in the history of the United States. It is the single most important step we have taken to strengthen our economy since World War II. Then he went on to say how the legislation was inspired and proposed by President Kennedy. It's been 1 year, 1 month, and 2 days since President Kennedy's urgent appeal to get it passed. And I'd hate to put hour to hour all of the calls, the talk, the reading, the work, the effort, the late night hours that Lyndon has put in during the last 3 months to get it passed." And it did go by the very happy majority of 74-19. With a generous Republican support. That is, in the Senate. I don't remember what the House vote was. Lyndon's speech mainly tried to do two things. First, to explain to each citizen how this would mean something to him by putting an average of $4 or $5 more a week into the pockets of most U.S. wage earners this year, beginning the following week. And then, secondly, by releasing millions of dollars into their private economy from corporations who would otherwise be saving it up to pay their taxes, it will stimulate new expansion and thereby encourage the growth and prosperity of the country. One of his highest accolades was to Senator Byrd, who had been staunchly against the bill from beginning to end, but had made it possible for the majority to work its will by letting it out of his committee where he could have bottled it up for God knows how long. A line I like best in Lyndon's speech was, No one can bury us or bluff us or beat us so long as our economy remains strong. It was a good moment for him, and I love to see him relish it. I hope he got all the joy out of it that he should. Immediately after the signing was over, we were whisked off to Mrs. Kennedy's house, just Lyndon and I, where we met practically all the former members of the President's cabinet for what was a rather moving 45 minutes or so. This was supposed to be a surprise for Mrs. Kennedy, but there were refreshments on hand. Lyndon brought to Mrs. Kennedy four of the historic pens which had been used in signing the tax bill, one for her, one for the John F. Kennedy Memorial Library, and one each for Caroline and John Jr. And the cabinet had a gold tray with coffee and cream and sugar service. The tray was engraved with the names of the entire cabinet and also of President Kennedy's closest White House advisors. Dean Rusk made the speech presenting the tray, and a very graceful one it was. It was a sort of a housewarming present, and it was, of course, given in memory of the President. Caroline was there with cute little stockings on that were disappeared somewhere up under her dress, and she had a little friend her own age there with her, and they were climbing around over the sofa, and I had a nice little talk with her. I told her Linda and Lucy wanted to come with her, and she says, well, wanted to come see her, and she said, why don't they? I do think it'd be a good idea if they did sometime. John was there and stomped all over the vast amount of tissue paper with which the gifts had been wrapped while Dean Rusk was making his speech. He was also the official opener for the gifts. As we emerged from the house, there were many neighbors on the sidewalk looking with great interest and a lot of flashlight bulbs popping, and of course you were asked lots of questions. I quickly made my way to the car. Lyndon did stand long enough to say to the reporter something graceful about President Kennedy had worked so long and so hard on the bill, and he had such faith in its integrity, and we were here to see Mrs. Kennedy and express our happiness at the fact that it was being signed. And he described the visit as very moving and very spiritual. I did note that none of the others, as they came out, had anything at all to say. And that may have been the way that Mrs. Kennedy would have preferred them to act. But Lyndon was acting the way he is, and the way he'd want people to act about him. As we drove off, he said, why don't we run by and have a drink with the Valentis? So we did. Imagine having the President unexpectedly when you have a 4 or 5 months old baby. Their place in Georgetown is very charming, very small. The baby came down and lay on Lyndon's lap and gurgled for a few minutes and then went very quietly and pleasantly to bed. What a joy. We had a drink, and Lyndon said he just believed he'd stay for supper. So Mary Margaret said she could work it out very well indeed, and sure enough, we did stay and had some delicious steaks about an hour later. Marianne Means and a young man she is dating came in. She's somebody that Lyndon and all men, in fact, have their eye on as considering an extremely attractive woman. So I guess I'll have to look her over harder. At any rate, her articles about Lyndon have all been very favorable. And that is at least pleasant. Summing it up, I can say I think this is the first time that Lyndon has been on TV that he felt all right about being on TV. Probably because he had a teleprompter. He had a story to tell that had some achievement in it. And it was something worth talking about. The last thought I had before I dropped off to sleep was reading the inscription on the tray, which went something like this. In memory of 3 shining years together, and wondering what was going on in the minds of all the people assembled there. Rusk, Wirtz, Dillon, Schlesinger, Sorensen, Bobby Kennedy, all of them.